Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Arrington.
I like that delay.
Dramatic delay. That delay just for effect. Don't know why.
I've decided to trim the beard in a fair bit.
You look ever so young, Luke.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've shaved off years.
You look 14 again.
Yeah, I look about 14. A bold 14-year-old.
A bold 14-year-old, which is that's totally normal, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. It just felt like I needed to change it up a bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean. When it's ever so warm, you kind of feel like you want your face to be able to breathe somewhat.
Yeah, you know what? My neck was getting very itchy.
Very itchy. Mm. I trim my neck.
Yeah.
Right up. Nice. Just mainly just because. Nice. Give the old neck a good trim.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suffer from itchy neck syndrome as well, Luke. This must be an incredibly interesting podcast to listen to so far.
Yeah. I mean, just to dive in then. So, in other horror news, Toby Hooper has died. He died like 3 or 4 days after our last recording where we talked about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Kind of crazy. Huge loss in the world of horror. I think it was the 26th of August he died, so that was 2 days ago from today.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy, right? I feel like...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a weird timing. Yeah. And also like George Romero died around the same time we recorded the... Not Living Dead.
Oh, no. Don't say there's a pattern here, Luke, please.
I'm a bit worried. We've got John Carpenter coming up.
Oh, God. Don't you even dare utter the words.
John Carpenter's like he's a rock and roller. He's like on tour, like just doing new albums and stuff, doing live performances.
Yeah, there's life in the old dog. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's weird to see. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to watch another Toby Hooper film. There's two more that I think that we should probably watch at some point. There's a Life Force, which looks insane. Have you seen that?
Don't think so.
And one called Funhouse as well that I've not seen, but I really want to watch. No.
Didn't he do Salem's Lot as well? Is that right?
Yeah, he did the season one, I think. There's another one called Return to Salem's Lot, which isn't based on the Stephen King thing. Yeah, so I think he did that one. He did like the classic Danny Glick scene.
Of course.
The window sort of thing. But yeah, so I feel like, I don't know, it's weird because I feel like Toby Hooper and George Romero, like them and their first two films kind of had like a lot in common, like super low budget. That's like a sort of socio-political sort of realism with them and just sort of defined genres. Do you know what I mean? Like the zombie genre and like the cannibal.
The cannibal Leatherface hick.
Yeah.
that crazy genre. Yeah, definitely. And I always say his name wrong, so I feel equally bad for calling him Tobe Hooper all the time.
Hooper.
It's just one of those things, you know, you see it written down a lot and you never really actually hear anyone utter it. So sorry, Toby.
It's quite a few times when There'll be plenty of words that I use in like writing and like reading. So if I read them all the time, never that confident to say them out loud because I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea how it is supposed to be pronounced.
Do you know what one gets me all the time? Hyperbole.
Hyperbole. Yeah. Hyperbole.
Hyperbole.
How is it pronounced? Because I always say hyperbole.
Ever so confusing.
It's one of those that I try not to say out loud as much
hyperbole,
as possible.
Hyperbole, I think it is. I'm pretty sure it's hyperbole.
Yours sounds way posher. Hyperbole.
But I think I thought it was hyperbole. And then when someone said it once, I was like, what?
Yeah.
But then I thought I was in the right by going, you're saying that wrong. But then so I didn't say anything.
I've heard people say hyperbole, and I thought it was like a sports game.
Well, like rollerball.
Yeah, hyperbole.
Hey, let's go play some hyperbole. Sounds too intense. Yeah. Sounds way too intense for me to want to enjoy.
Hyperbole. Okay. So in terms of the show, we're now on number 26 of the 50 best horror movies ever. Last week we did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, as I said. And this week we're going to be doing The Others, which came out in 2001, which is 16 years ago. And that seems insane to me. It doesn't feel like an old... It's not like... I don't know. It feels like quite a recent film. But then again, we're old now. We're like, maybe we're just getting really old.
Speak for yourself, Luke. I mean, I know I'm older than you, but come on.
You could trim your beard all you want, me still, you know, age.
Exactly. I can trim my beard all I want. I could dress like a 14-year-old. I'm dressed a bit like a 14-year-old today. I've got a Metallica t-shirt on, and you can't see, but I've got some camouflage shorts on.
Nice, nice.
I look like a cross between a 14-year-old and like a possible Southern, don't want to say racist, I'm not going to say that, Southern hick man.
Yeah. You look like an antagonist from a Texas Chainsaw Massacre film.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, you're like the guy who would drive by at the end in the truck and like help the final girl get away.
Yeah. I'm the one who took on Leatherface and lived to tell the tale.
Yeah, yeah.
Or did he live?
Yeah, I think so. One of them lived.
Yeah.
Okay, do you want to tell us a bit about the film?
I will tell you a bit about The Others. So The Others is a 2001 Spanish-American supernatural gothic horror film. It was written, directed, and scored, that's interesting, by Alejandro Amenábar.
Mm, very interesting.
Ooh, it stars Nicole Kidman and Fionnuala Flanagan, that's a good name, as well as, obviously, Others, The Others. That's it. Sounded like I was going to say something else then, but that is the end of the bit I was going to say.
So this is what Empire Magazine have to say. A classical ghost story in the spirit of The Innocents and Robert Wise's The Haunting. The Others has lent added poignancy for the relatable, touching presence at its heart. Protective mum, played by Kidman, just wants to shield her two photosensitive weans from the bright, unforgiving world outside their creaking country pile. It's a task that's made increasingly difficult for all the eerie goings-on within it. Spanish director Alejandro Amenábar... conjures icy atmospherics from the gothic scenario, proving that less is definitely more when it comes to scares. Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 83%. That's out of 100, if you didn't know. IMDb gave it 7.6. And the Facebook group, the Horror Hangout Board of Advisors, Matthew Stott says, I remember thinking it was going to be great, but by the end, I was just a bit shrug. Tommy Draper says, I like atmosphere, but found it very dull. Didn't like the twist ending. I've not seen it again, even after 16 years. Then Edward Harvey says, from what I remember, it was really creepy and had a good atmosphere, but I don't remember any huge scares. So the board of advisors are kind of like, it's good, but it's a little bit meh. I don't know, man. What do you think about this? Should this be this high on the list?
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, it's a huge The Innocents vibe, definitely. I was definitely, after seeing that film, it felt very similar. I always thought that I'd never seen this film. When I was about to watch it, I thought, I've never seen this. I'm glad I'm gonna watch it. And when I did, it all kind of came hurtling back towards me. I've actually seen it a couple of times.
That's
it,
hurtling towards you.
Oh, my God! The Nicole Kidman came hurtling towards me.
Nearly got me in the chops.
Nearly got me in the chops, Nicole Kidman, and her crazy, crazy shotgun-wielding antics.
Yeah.
And I...
With a pillow.
And it all kind of, exactly, she looked at the pillow. And I kind of realised that I've only ever seen it, but like I've seen a lot of parts of it, I think. I don't think I've ever sat down and watched it. And that's actually how I watched it this time, in a few parts. I didn't watch it in one sitting. I always thought I kind of didn't really like it. I think I like some bits. Other bits kind of get on my nerves. I think it's a fairly well-made film. I think in terms of, obviously, we're just going to discuss spoilers, especially one very big one. In terms of twist ending, it's one of those that everybody kind of says, oh, I saw that coming a mile off, that twist ending.
Yeah.
But I can't remember if I ever saw this film without knowing the twist ending. So it's hard to put into context whether it actually works as a twist ending.
Yeah. I don't, but, yeah, same, whatever I've ever known. Even just going into this film knowing there is a twist ending means you start to look for the clues. Like if you knew the ending, or if you went to watch The Sixth Sense and you knew that there was a twist ending, I think you could quite quickly pick up what it is. But yeah, if you go into a film without knowing what the end is going to be, then I don't know. I think it's kind of intriguing. I think this film is very neat and it's very tidy, and it's not really like it reminds me of Del Toro. But like, it's not got anywhere near the bite to it that Del Toro films have. Like, I think this is a much tidier version of The Devil's Backbone, much tidier ghost story. And I don't know. I prefer the roughness. I prefer the like little touches of crazy. Where this film just feels a little bit paint by numbers.
It felt a bit paint by numbers. I also felt like the soundtrack was telling me how to feel. A lot. I get that a lot with films. You know, when the soundtrack is just so bad, you're just God, the tension. I'm only feeling tense because of the music. I'm not feeling tense at all because of what's going on the screen. Suddenly the music's ramping up and I'm getting terrified, but that's because of the music. I mean, is that a good thing, or is that something is that a bit weak? Like, occasionally I felt like the music got very, very dramatic at times, which weren't so dramatic at all.
Overplayed its hand. But that might be Alejandro, because he was a composer's role, right? So maybe he shouldn't have done that. Maybe he should have got someone else in to do that.
I just say that was one thing, because I don't know if, for some reason, I don't know if it's a problem with my TV, Luke. I'm going to talk about my TV. What happens when I'm watching films is that music action sequences are really loud, and when it gets down to dialogue, it gets really quiet. So what I tend to do, I like adjust the volume when there's some dialogue, but most of the time I forget to turn it back down, and then suddenly, bam! That's
I think that's the like. Something to do with the compression or something of the I think that's just the way films are, like to try and get you to sort of lean in the quiet bits, and they just sort of slap you around the face when it
annoys me now, especially with a film like this, which especially with a film like this,
turn it down.
You turn it down, man. Jesus Christ, turn it down.
Cut your flipping feet. You're like an old man. Like
I am like an old man.
Yeah,
it's true, in more ways than one. But I feel kind of like the film's tricking me by this point, because I'm like, I'm annoyed because I'm not as invested in this film as this film thinks I am. So when the music starts doing those things and it starts making me have extreme emotional responses to something that I don't feel like, that invested
you can't manipulate me, man. I'm not feeling that way.
Like, yeah, man. Hey, music, don't go telling me how to feel.
Yeah. I sat down to watch this with Kat, and she said, oh, this is one of those Shyamalan films, isn't it? And that's weird, 'cause it's not a Shyamalan film, but it came out around the same time as The Sixth Sense and The Village, that sort of same era. And I'm sure at some point in my life, I thought it was a Shyamalan film as well. I think I just assumed, because of that twist ending. But it feels very sort of Shyamalan-y a little bit. Is that just a twist ending, or is that...
Yeah, probably, but there's definitely a Shyamalan vibe. I mean, they probably bounced. Sixth Sense was 1999, so it was 2 years later. They probably were. I mean, that was such a cultural phenomenon, that film.
Yeah.
It's probably hard not to be influenced by something like that when you're making a horror / ghost story.
Yeah.
It's in a similar vein, not necessarily to The Sixth Sense.
But, I know what you mean, As soon as you had a twist ending in there, people were going to be like, and it ended like a horror type story, people were going to be like, M. Night Shyamalan. Like, they were instantly going to say, that's the Shyamalan film, because it has that trope in there, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you what, this is the first time I've watched this film. I've seen this about 4 or 5 times now. This is the first time I've watched this film after having seen The Innocents. And it's one of the reasons why I really like this podcast and watching all these films, because I watch horror films all the time, but I tend to just stick to like new stuff. And the fact that we're doing this kind of forces you to go back, and now I can watch a lot of the horror films of today and link back and go, oh, that's interesting. That's got that element from this other film. And I think it's given me a much wider and much more mature, refined palette of horror films.
I've got a very refined horror palette. Don't go feeding me any old shit because I won't be interested. All right, I know what you mean. Like, I kind of used to watch. I watch a lot of horror, but again, I would stick to a lot of the things that I liked. I didn't delve into like modern horror very much because I kind of didn't like it so much. And the same with films that are much older. Like, I never really delved in. So from like the 70s to the 90s.
The other side of the cliff. Are you like on a little island?
I'm on a little island and
called the 70s to late 90s.
Yeah.
Is it late 90s? So what's the other side of the cliff for you?
Well,
there's plenty
of horror. There's plenty of modern horror I enjoy, but there's definitely a time of horror films that I start to think most of it's crap. Most of it. You know what I mean? There'll be loads and loads of jewels, obviously, but I reckon from maybe 2005.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, so
maybe. Don't hold me to that, but you know.
No, 2005. What, January?
maybe February. Yeah, but as I said, like, I enjoy a lot of modern horror films, but I think certain tropes in horror started to, maybe later than that then, I reckon since Paranormal Activity came around is when horror started to really get in the pan for me.
Yeah. What about like films
Here was a jump scare! Here was a jump scare!
Oh, yeah.
Like that sort of stuff.
Okay, but what about films, I'm trying to think of like good, you know, horror films that sort of a good, like Get Out, I mean, is one example that is obviously a good horror film. There are those like ones that stand out though, right?
Oh yeah, there's plenty. Absolutely, still loads, but I just mean in a very, very general term in terms of like mainstream releases, cinema releases, popular films, like anything like Paranormal Activity, Insidious, all of those films that have consequentially birthed other films.
Yeah.
Birthed.
The Conjuring universe is what it's called now.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, I don't mind the Conjuring films.
I think they're pretty great. I need to watch the new Annabelle film at some point. It's directed by David Sandberg. It might be all right. It's by the guy who did the Lights Out film.
I think I've seen the first Annabelle film.
I don't think you need to. The first one's not very good. But
yeah.
Tell you what I did watch. It's a recent modern horror that I really enjoyed. Hush. It's a Netflix original.
Just
came out of nowhere.
Oh, is it a Netflix original, is it?
Didn't get any sort of theatrical release. Directed by Mike Flanagan, who did Oculus, which I think was okay. But this was really surprising. I thought it was really solid little slasher, home invasion type of horror film. It's really good.
I've not seen that, so I'll probably go and watch that on your recommendation, Luke.
I will totally recommend it. And he's also directing Gerald's Game, Stephen King's Gerald's Game. It's going to be another Netflix release. It'd be interesting.
Very interesting indeed.
Okay, so let's talk about the others again. So the cast, the key players. So we've got Nicole Kidman. She plays a woman, a lovely lady called Grace Stewart. She puts on this sort of, I think they call it RP English accent, which isn't like a real English accent. It's just the middle to upper class sort of English accent. It's you know, Mary Poppins sort of esque.
Yeah.
Fionnuala Flanagan plays Bertha Mills. She's like the head of the laundry. head of laundry.
Head of the laundry.
Baking and starching
she's,
collars.
She's I think a bloody that. Slave at the end of the day, isn't she, Luke? She's a slave. Don't look at any other way.
She's the head of that department, laundry and starching collars. Christopher Eccleston, he pops in for a quick shag, which we'll talk about later on.
Does he? You're describing this film very if you're describing it, pitching this film to somebody. Well, I've got this idea, right? We've got Nicole Kidman doing an accent. Christopher Eccleston pops in for a quick shag.
Someone's starching his collar when he's not
Someone's starching his collar while he's having sex with him. It's also very awkward.
Eric Sykes plays a Mr. Edmund Tuttle, who plays a sort of like I don't know how to describe
it. He's
like,
Alan Titch.
He's a gardener. He
loves leaves.
I think he's supposed to be like slightly Yorkshireman sort of thing. He has this weird way of talking when everything sounds kind of sarcastic.
Yeah.
And sort of slow. He was actually one of my favourite characters in the film.
Sarcastic bastard. There's two little kids in it who are Grace's kids, and their dad's gone off to war before he comes back for a quick shag. And they're like photosensitive. So they're in this massive house, but all of the curtains are drawn constantly, and there's like a whole obsession of locking one door before you open another just to trap the light. And I think she says at one point, treat this house like a ship, the light is like water.
Yeah, that's quite a good analogy.
Got me thinking about it for a while. It did. I was thinking about it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Very nice.
Very well thought out. So this is in Jersey Island. I think post World War II.
It's just like coming to the end of World War II, isn't it?
Right, yeah, yeah. So the Nazis have fobbed off now, right?
The Nazis have done a runner, aren't they?
Okay, yeah. So it opens with a sort of weird storybook sort of thing, which I was reading the director, this film was inspired by those same sort of storybooks you used to read as a kid. It's like a weird little illustrated book, and it's sort of talking about families and good family living and that kind of thing. So we're introduced to these characters, the children's disease, that kind of thing. And then the three servants pop up, just knock on the door.
Yeah.
So we've got Bertha Mills, Mr. Tuttle, and there's a mute girl called Lydia. I think they say that they want a job. Does that sound right? They say...
I think they say they want a job. They worked in the house years ago. And then Grace sort of claims that their last servant's just up and left out of nowhere. Didn't even leave a note.
Yeah,
they fobbed right off.
Yeah. So there's a creepy mist as well that sort of hangs around the garden and the grounds. So you can never see pretty much past the driveway of the estate, past the like the yard sort of thing. So it's got a sort of creepy atmosphere. The kids are already super creepy. I mean, are they as creepy as the Innocence kids to you? I don't know. They look quite creepy to me.
I don't know if they're as creepy as the Innocence kids. They're definitely a little bit more annoying.
Hmm.
Or maybe equally annoying as the Innocence kids.
Yeah, yeah. Do we... should we... I mean, I'm trying not to say the spoiler here, but I feel like the what's it called? The servants should be kind of scared of the kids anyway. Because... I can't really talk about this without sort of spoiling it, so we'll have to loop back around.
But save it.
Yeah, we'll save it. Don't keep that. Put a pin in that one. But so Anna. So the two kids, we've got Anna and Nicholas.
Yeah.
Anna starts talking to Miss Mills, who's like the head of laundry, and she says the servants left after Mummy went mad. And that's like all we pretty much know. It's all very sort of ominous and creepy. We get the idea that the servants know the house. There's something a little bit weird about them. And then I think Nicole Kidman says there's no such thing as ghosts. It's all nonsense. And I don't know. We definitely get the idea pretty much straight away that the three servants are not to be trusted. There's something odd about them. Don't they like find out that like they just because they said they came because of a newspaper ad or something, and we find out that the letter never even got picked up.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. So they just sort of turned up randomly and sort of played the part.
They could sense that a job was going, couldn't they? They just could sense it. I mean, that's good. That's the job centre would be proud of them for that.
Yeah.
They'd be like, God, that's really good. I know you've got to try and apply for a certain amount of jobs per week, but that's really going the extra mile. Just sensing a job is needed, and then just going and applying.
Yeah, the little kid, Grace. She says there's been some weird. There's other people in the house. Says there's a little boy called Victor. They've been saying the house is theirs. Threatening to remove the curtains and all this kind of thing.
Threatening to remove. I'll remove the curtains. I will. Don't do it. I'm photosensitive. I bloody will. Oh, bloody well.
Yeah, is that like... So what would happen? Would they burst into...
I think they burst flame in a similar way that like Dracula would.
Right, right.
Assuming that's what photosensitivity is, basically vampirism. Yeah, they hate garlic as well. Confirmed.
Okay. So, wait. So, that's not true. obviously, but like, is this like a real disease? This photosensitivity.
I bet there's probably something like that where you probably break out and blotches in your skin or something. It's probably something. Right. But Nicole Kidman, I mean, let's be honest, as Grace, is pretty hysterical throughout this film, isn't she? I mean, yeah. She'd be annoying to be around, I think, in any sense. I mean, I like Nicole Kidman, but God, she is hysterical. She gets that gun out way too often. Yeah. Anytime something's happening, well, the gun's the answer.
Yeah,
the
we know she would have voted for in America.
Yeah, exactly. She's just like, well, what's happened? Oh, God, I cut my finger while dicing some onions. The gun! The gun's the answer!
Yeah.
The onions!
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
So, yeah, she's in the house. And if anyone's got photosensitivity, I think it must be her, because her skin is incredibly pale. Just in everything I've seen her in. But she hears a noise upstairs, and she knows everyone's downstairs. So she's instantly like got the shotgun out, and they're searching the house. And then I don't know what, so they just sort of search around the house, they don't find anything.
There's just a weird few scenes of like different occurrences, like footsteps, voices, various other things. She orders obviously everyone to search the house, and then when that's happening, she finds this like Book of the Dead, which is basically an album of like loads of dead people, loads of deceased family members who possibly lived in the house before them. So obviously this starts to ramp up the idea that there's a ghost, there are actually some ghosts in this house, because obviously the girl's saying she's seen them, she's seen a boy, she's seen an old lady, she's seen a couple of other people. That's quite creepy when you see the drawing that the girl's done of like five different people. She writes down next to them the amount of times she's actually seen them. So she's got like a little boy, five, a man, two, a woman, like a couple, and then she's drawn this like pretty terrifying looking old woman with like wild hair and like no pupils in her eyes, and she's written like 17 next to it or something.
And
that
was as it's zoomed in onto that 17, she crosses it out and writes 18. that was kind of creepy. So, yeah, there isn't really many scares though, do you think? Because I don't remember anything being particularly scary. There's just a kind of like an ominous sense of.
Yeah, it's just slightly creepy. It's slightly creepy stuff. Like, that was pretty creepy. That put the willies up me a little bit. You know what I mean? Put the willies up me.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was the music was getting me on edge. And that was literally because of the fluctuation in volume. Nothing else. Nothing else. And I've said that already. But there was nothing else that was really getting me.
There's a bit where the two kids are in bed and the boy hears someone walking around or something, and he asks the sister to shut up, and she says, "It's not me, it's Victor." And it goes to like a curtain, and that's kind of creepy because it looks like he's going to be there, and he starts talking. You can't tell if it's her that's talking in his voice. It's all kind of strange and odd.
There are moments where you kind of expected a scare. You expected them to look, and then suddenly there'd be a little boy there or something. But
I think if that was today, I think they would have like had a jump scare. Like, some would have just like walked across the hallway, or you know, ran across there from the curtains.
Yeah, I think they did really well at sort of explaining the, well, obviously again we'll get to it, but explaining the sort of difference between the ghost world and the real world.
Yeah
such
There's a bit where I keep wanting to say Nicole Kidman, a character's called Grace, she finds like she's like searching around the house, and she finds like a photo book of people, and she thinks they're like asleep. I've seen these photos in real life.
It's
a tradition back in the day where when people died, you used to dress them up and make them almost look like they're alive, and then take a picture of them.
Just having a lovely, looks like having a lovely sleep, lazy bastards.
Yeah, and so she finds this book, and it's like full of these people who she finds out are dead, and she asks for Mr. Tuttle to get rid of it, and I was thinking, this is like an incredibly boring life, like in that house, because they don't go anywhere, they don't do anything. The kids are constantly getting told off.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to.
They can't have any light on their skin. I mean, I love basking in the light. That's my favourite thing. And they can't do that.
Yeah.
It's lovely. Yeah. Pretty boring life. They're always in pyjamas as well.
They are always in pyjamas. I didn't even pick that up. Yeah. And that book, could have kept them entertained for years.
Minutes. Oh. Years.
We went on two different sides of the scale here. But
years. How long would you have been entertained by that book, Luke, do you reckon?
Well, I mean, not like in one long like block. Like, you look at 10 minutes, and you go, oh, creepy.
Not in one long block. Luke's not come to work for weeks. Where is he?
He's found
he's got this new book. He got a book of the dead. Yeah. He hasn't had a wash in 3 weeks. He's not been eating.
He is now dead. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He is now dead. He has now become dead. Yeah. And he left in his will, please take a photo of me. All dressed
I've
up nicely.
Left a blank page. And the...
yeah, right at the back. LK written on there, ready for you.
Yeah. At this point, Nicole Kidman, she asks Mrs. Tuttle to get rid of the book, and then she starts talking to the laundrette woman, Mrs. Mills, about like when she worked in the house before, and she said, yeah, they used to work in here, and then... their employees moved back to London, I think she says, and they're all evacuated due to the tuberculosis outbreak.
There was an outbreak of tuberculosis, and the outbreak TB. Was you couldn't say the word.
No wonder we've got a bloody TB jab.
Can I get a tobacco? Just do any old jab in my arm, please. I'll have anything.
There's like a... A scene pretty soon after, there's like an empty piano that they're not allowed to play, and I think she hears someone playing it. Again, this is all kind of classic. That's what I mean. Like, it's all kind of standard ghost haunting bits.
Yeah. And then she goes back to the piano and she sort of locks it up, doesn't she? And then locks it up with the key and then turns around and pretty much is open again. Yeah. Again, whenever these things are happening, Nicole Kidman goes straight for the gun.
She does. She's trigger happy.
She's trigger happy. She's like, well, if there are any ghosts in here, I'm going to shoot them because obviously that works.
Yeah.
Blow their bloody brains off.
There's a bit where Mrs. Mills says something about, well, they're definitely like sometimes the world of the living and the dead get a bit mixed up, and that's probably something that's happening right now. And then Nicole Kidman's like, that's bullshit. But then she says, like, she's going to the priest or something. She's going to get someone to bless the house.
She's going to go find a priest, and he's going to come back, and he's going to sort the house out. He's going to bless the house, get rid of the old ghostly spirits. And this is where sort of the stuff from the servant starts to... The fact that they're a bit untrustworthy starts to really get confirmed, pretty much.
Because
when she's going, she kind of mentions to Mr. Tuttle that to look for a cemetery that was on the outskirts of the house, where perhaps some people have been buried. And I think she's trying to sort of match these to the people who she can see, who sort of the little girl can apparently see, so Victor, etc.
Yeah.
And when that happens, obviously Mrs. Tuttle? No.
The woman. Maybe. Mrs. Mills, her name is.
Mrs. Yeah. Mills, sorry. Yeah, it's Mr. Tuttle. So she sort of says to him, do you reckon we're ready to tell her yet? They say something like that, don't they?
Well, yeah, and she says no, and they sort of hide... the gravestones in the leaves.
Yeah. So it's almost like they're complicit in something. I don't know if we necessarily needed this at this particular point, because I think we were kind of suspicious of them anyway, and having this actual confirmation that they were untrustworthy, don't think it was necessarily needed. It was almost like, look at what's going on.
Yeah
felt a little bit obvious.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's a bit wink wink nudge. So whilst trying to get outside of the sort of the grounds, so you get sort of lost in the mist. There's something in the mist, and it's not monsters. It's her husband, played by Christopher Eccleston. I don't know his name. I think he's just referred to as husband throughout the film.
Charles.
Oh, Charles. Okay, cool.
And he turns up, and as soon as he sees Nicole Kidman, he goes, "Oh, I'm gagging for a shag. I'm absolutely gagging for a shag. Up into war. Get yourself indoors." That's pretty much what he says to her, because that's pretty much what he did.
Yeah, so I'm not really sure. I mean, they don't shag right away, but he looks... I don't know. I don't really understand if he's supposed to be a dead guy. I don't really know what's going on there. But he comes in. He doesn't seem particularly happy. He's apparently home from the war. But they bring him in the house. They sort of...
Turns out he loved the war. Yeah. He's having a whale of a time. Right?
Yeah.
And... now he's back. He's like, bloody hell, back to this old shit again.
Yeah. So he goes straight to bed, as all depressed people do. And then we have like the best scene of the film, like the most iconic one for me, which is where Nicole Kidman like puts like a veil. She made this veil for her little daughter, Anne. She puts her in it. She looks very pretty. And then says, "I'll be back in a sec." Pops out as a number one or a two. She doesn't actually specify.
And then, could have been a bit of both.
Could have been a bit of both. It normally is. And and then she comes back, and then she hears, I think like she hears like an old lady or something singing or something.
No, well, she basically hears Anne singing.
That's right. Yeah.
But then when she looks behind the sort of veil, she's playing with like a little doll thing. She sees a little old lady's hand.
Yeah.
A little old lady's wrinkly hand.
Yeah.
And that's quite scary, because then she obviously goes around the girl, very, and the girl's still got a veil on her face, but you see that it's an old lady with very milky eyes.
Yeah. And then she's like, "Where's my shotgun?"
But, she's like, "Where's my shotgun? I'm going to blast this bitch to hell." But yeah, so basically, it is a little girl's voice, and then she says, like, "What the hell have you done with my daughter?" And she goes, "Are you mad?
Are you mad, mummy?" Yeah.
"I am your daughter." And then she destroys her. Nicole Kidman goes in hammer and tong, gives her a couple of the one, gives her a couple of the old... Mayweather's right on the old chops.
yeah it's pretty much you know, a riff on the Luke "I am your father" scene, and he goes, "No, I am your daughter," and she goes, "No," and then she sort of races in, kicks her in the chops, and then
and when she rips the veil off, it is just her daughter. So she's
Nicole
Kidman's like, "Bloody hell, I'm glad I didn't go and get the gun, because I would have killed you."
And then so the daughter runs away. She's terrified of her own mum. She goes to the husband, and then we get like a weird sort of scene where the husband, Charles, says, "Tell me what happened on some particular day," and they have like a bit of an argument, but I don't think they actually say what they're arguing about. And then this is when the shag happens. He's like, "I'm going to go," and then she says, "No, wait," and then they have a shag. But the thing is,
did you say this is when the shag happens? Oh, shag's going up, here it comes, there it is.
I only say shag because they're talking in this sort of British accents. And I feel like they would say shag like that in a sort of Austin Powers way. But proper shag.
Yeah.
There's a wee bit after the sex where they're sleeping and their faces are like so close to each other. And I was like, that's not real.
That's not real.
No one sleeps like that. Yeah.
Hot breath all over each other. Your breath getting caught in a horrible whirlwind. No.
Yeah, trying to sleep and it's this condensation of someone else's breath on your cheeks.
Yeah. How could you relax?
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
So then when she wakes up, gets out of bed, the lazy bint, Charles has actually gone. Disappeared. They don't know where he's gone. He's just, you know, he's gone back to the war or
he's
wherever.
Done one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just like, he's got what he wanted from young Nicole, and he's gone. See you later.
And then the kids are screaming. All the curtains in the house have disappeared. Like every single one. All the water is getting into the house. You know, the lights. She chucks over a coat, and then I think she sort of blames the Mrs. Mills and Mr. Tuttle for removing the curtains.
Yeah, basically thinks that it was them. And then when she starts arguing with them, they obviously, they're like, well, it would be all right if they got a bit of light now and again. So it's almost like, right, okay, so what's going on here? Are they genuinely trying to hurt the children, or do they just not believe Grace that those kids have got the photo sensitivity? You know, what are they doing? Yeah. Tuttle says something about his mum or his sister having like real bad rheumatism.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So he always talks about this. And then one day it was gone. Like, he always sort of has that weird slow way of talking.
And it's like, it's almost like he's saying, so if they've got an illness, basically one day it'll just be gone. Yeah. So that's fine.
It was a bit earlier when they said, like, are you any good at like gardening and working hard? And he goes, yes, we're very good at gardening.
And, it's almost like it shouldn't have been a take.
Yeah, exactly.
Their answer's gone. Perfect. You came across well as an absent-minded.
I think what happened. Yeah. Well, I'm very good at gardening and hard work. Like, they've edited that together.
And, yeah. and the director's gone, we'll just keep that in because it feels real, right? It feels really realistic. I love it. Perfect.
Yeah. And Mr. Tuttle's like, what? Sure. Where's my pie? Okay. And then, so she kicks them out. She kicks the servants out.
Goes, bloody do one, you mugs, trying to kill my kids.
With the shotgun again. She's like, get out. Because that's the only way you can fire people these days is with a shotgun. Get the fuck out of my office. Mrs. Mills is miffed.
She's like, bloody hell, that Nicole Kidman is the right sort.
She says, uncover the gravestones, and then ominous music tells you to feel ominous. Ooh.
Do you feel ominous? Yes. Good.
okay, so what happens now? So I think she's searching for the curtains. She can't find them.
And then that night, the kids go sneaking outside to look for their dad, who obviously went missing. And they're like, if he's gone missing, he's clearly just going to be milling about outside. So we'll just go and find him.
Yeah, yeah.
And when they go, and find the graveyard.
That's right, yeah. So the little boy runs a little further on. At the same time, Grace finds the Book of the Dead. She finds a photo of our three servants dead. And the little girl finds the gravestones and sees their names, right?
Yeah.
So then they both sort of realize that these bitches are dead, and then
the servants are ghosts. They're the ghosts all along.
Yeah. And then the boy is like, "I don't believe you. You're always teasing me." It always happens. Little siblings, they're always teasing each other. They're always saying people are dead when they're not, and just the way it is with little kids. And have you got a sister, by the way?
Yeah. I do. We've got two sisters.
Me too. Older.
Both younger. One's really young. One's 9.
Wow, that is young. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So, now the three of them have gone full on ghostly, ominous sort of evil. Because they're like walking in a sort of slow walk towards the kids.
Yeah, as you do.
Yeah, because when people are saying they're dead, they're ghosts. Like, you don't want to go, no, we're not. You don't want to, like, light things up. Hey, we're not dead.
Hey, look, we're not dead.
You want to walk really slow.
If we were dead, could we do this? One of them's juggling. One of them's on a unicycle. One of them's spinning plates. No, just walk slowly. Say nothing. And we're not dead.
Do the old creepy eyes as you walk towards them.
Exactly.
The little boy runs. A little girl says, okay, I believe you. They run away. They run to the mum. She locks them out of the house. And you get a really nice shot here, actually, of... She says to the two kids, you go upstairs, I'll watch the front door. And like, she locks the door, and the three servants, I found this like a really nice shot. So the three servants are just sort of looking in through the window. They're kind of underlit, and they're kind of mostly silhouette, and they're sort of looking in, and they're saying about, wait, how does this reveal happen? I feel like it's cleverer than the way I'm thinking, than I'm remembering it.
Yeah. I mean, this bit was good because this was a bit where they could have clearly just walked through the door, you know. If that was a different film, they would have like walked through the door, and that would have been confirmed that they were ghosts. But the fact that they could stay outside knocking pretty much to come in. Let us in!
Yeah, yeah. So that's it. So she says she can't shoot us here. The tuberculosis killed us off years ago. And then they say you're dead. I don't know how they reveal it. I'm sure there's a smarter way that they do this.
I think they basically say to Nicole Kidman that, you know, the living and the dead need to find a way to live together, essentially.
Right, okay, so we don't reveal yet. That's right, okay.
So there's no reveal yet. The reveal happens when the kids go upstairs to their bedroom, hide. They hide in a cupboard.
Yeah.
And then obviously someone's trying to open the sort of cupboard. And when it opens, suddenly, bang, it's the old lady okay. that Anne's already been seeing. And then Nicole Kidman's character obviously runs upstairs to see mm-hmm. what's going on. And the reveal sort of happens.
That's
it's
right,
not
yeah.
like a big. It's not like a huge reveal. Like bang, this is, you're kind of. It's one of those reveals where you're like trying to work out exactly what the reveal means, even though we kind of know.
Yeah,
so basically, when she opens the door, the room's kind of completely changed. There's some sort of seance happening in the middle of the room with the old lady and the new sort of residents of the house, who are sort of Keith Allen is one of them, and they're sort of communicating, making contact with ghosts. And then we realize the ghosts are the children and Grace.
Yeah, this I actually found this really good scene. So the sound design is really good. So the seance, the blind old woman has got the pencil scratching against the paper. She's asking the kids, why did their mother kill them or something like that? And then they're saying, we're not dead. They're screaming. Music's getting all sort of tense and stuff. And then Nicole Kidman goes crazy and starts shaking the seance table and ripping up the papers. And we see it from the present day perspective, and they're seeing what looks like a classic haunting. It's quite good. I think it was. I don't know. I thought it was quite a nice little. bless you. I thought it was quite a nice little reveal.
It was good. The flitting back and forth between the ghost world, which is where Grace and the kids exist, and then the actual world, where we saw she was shaking the table pretty hardcore in her world, but in the real world it was shaking just a little bit. That was cool. Sort of try and work out the rules and the parameters of these worlds and how they work, which is that they can coexist and they do affect one another, but they don't affect one another in such an extreme way, so they can essentially live separately.
Yeah, yeah.
If they wanted to, because then it's pretty much confirmed that they are all ghosts, and then Nicole Kidman, Grace, kind of starts to realize exactly what happened, and we kind of find out that she smothered the kids. She obviously went mad at some point, smothered the kids to death, and then shot herself with her favorite shotgun, obviously.
The classic shotgun, yeah.
Yeah.
In the present day, the residents decide to move out because they don't like the hauntings. So Victor and these people move. In the ghost world, the other world, Mrs. Mills says the others come and go. Sometimes you can scare them off. Sometimes they'll just leave. Sometimes you won't even notice them at all. It's weird. And then the kids decide to they just decide to stay with the mum. Then is that how that happens?
Yeah, so they obviously realise that they're no longer photosensitive, so they sort of go out and play in sunlight. The house sort of gets put up for sale.
Mm.
And then Grace, it's weird because like Grace is very religious. She's like Catholic. But here is where Anne sort of says to Grace, are we in limbo? And she says she's not even sure anymore. She ain't got a bloody clue.
So is it Christopher Eccleston's character, Charlie, when he comes back from the war, what's happening there? So is he dead, and then he's like just trying out? So
what I reckon is he's dead. He died when he was at the war, and he somehow crossed over into this place as a dead person. But he's obviously not quite. He's still not quite sure what's happened, what's going on. So he kind of feels like, do I want to be here? Do I not? Do I belong somewhere else? That's what I kind of got from that.
Well, and then when he finds out the truth of it, he decides he doesn't want to stay.
It's almost like they're kind of all where they're sort of haunting the place where they died. So maybe he's drawn back to them for some reason because it's his family, but really he's drawn back to the war where he actually died.
Yeah, because he's going to occupy that place maybe. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, no, it's quite. I mean, you like. I think you're right. It's not so much that the twist ending is effective in its way, but it's kind of like you kind of understand what the twist is going to be, but it's how will it develop and what does that mean for the characters and that.
Yeah, because I think as a revealing that the servants are ghosts, that kind of feels good. That kind of feels like a big reveal. That feels like it could be the big reveal, you know?
Yeah.
It's almost like there's a level of reveals now, aren't there? Yeah. So we're going from something that's like the servants are the ghosts. Oh no, actually the main characters are the ghosts. So I mean, it is pretty effective, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So, jump scares, scary bit. I never did any jump scares. There was a bit, obviously, where the old woman is under the veil. That was kind of scary. And there was a bit where they're hiding in the closet, the two kids, and then she says, "Stop breathing," because he's like breathing like really. In fact, the mum said that earlier on as well. And I thought, I wonder if that's a reference to smothering them. She says, "Stop breathing," when he's breathing really loud. But then he says, then he starts breathing, but you can still hear someone breathing. I thought that was kind of scary.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it just, I don't think it's a particularly scary film. It's kind of creepy, kind of PG. I wonder if it was a PG, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty PG. It had a creepy vibe, I think. Obviously, not too many jump scares. Didn't really matter, I guess. And the reveal you kind of see coming. I think rather than being a big reveal, it does feel kind of drip fed throughout the film. Guide you quite a lot towards the twist rather than hitting you with it and then going bang, well, what
it
the
wasn't,
hell?
It wasn't a Shyamalan like rug pull, which I think people lump it in with.
No, not at all. It was kind of like if you watch the film and you really do take it in, even if you didn't know the twist, it's got to be one of the things you're thinking. Yeah. That thought must cross your mind when you're thinking, wait a minute, are these guys ghosts after all?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Okay, man, are you ready for some trivia?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So, number one, I never tell you these people. So Alakina Mann, who plays Anne, the little girl, James Bentley, who plays Nicholas, the little boy, they were cast after an intensive search that encompassed 5,000 children.
Wow. Yes, that sounds like it could be true.
True. And I think they were probably just going for like, because they look like stereotypical ghost English ghost children, if you know what I mean? They've got like, there's something about them, like especially the Thomas kid. Like, he just looks like even if I saw him in real life, I'd be like, oh, fuck.
Is that like... Oh, Jesus. No, he's got one of his faces. No offense to him. He's obviously grown up now. He's got one of his faces. He's got like a slightly adult face, even though he's like a little child.
Yeah.
He's like an adult trapped in a child's body. Yeah. Help me!
Okay, number two. Nicole Kidman actually quit during rehearsals because playing Grace gave her nightmares. So she never appeared in the film.
Yeah. Oh, God. False?
Well, that last bit I added just then was false, but apparently she quit during rehearsals. It doesn't actually say, it just said Nicole Kidman actually quit during rehearsals.
You know what that means? Quit the rehearsal. So it's probably like the end of the day. I'm quitting this rehearsal now. Oh, well, that's right, Nicole, because we're 5 minutes away from finishing.
Yeah. I'm off, actually. Yeah.
I'm off, actually. Somebody write that down as a thing that happened, all right? That's a thing that happened. I was so scared by this thing. Yeah. Get it into the marketing for the film because they're going to be terrified.
Yeah, this makes it sound like she actually quit, but yeah, I get the point. So that's two out of five. Okay, number three, Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, they were together at the time of this film. Tom Cruise's high-profile divorce was finalized the same week as the others was released on account of Tom Cruise being totally convinced that Nicole was actually a ghost.
Oh, Jesus. Is he still convinced of that?
I think he is.
He's like, she's still hanging around. So, bloody hell. That's got to be false.
He's been a ghost all along.
I mean, I know Tom Cruise is a Scientologist, but, you know.
Yeah, he's a very, very smart Scientologist.
He's a very smart guy, yeah.
But, So, so if she isn't a ghost, just riddle me this, Mr. Errington. If she isn't a ghost, what film has she been in since? I can't think of anything.
Don't even let me finish. None. She's been in none.
Okay. Exactly.
If you go back to those films that you think she's in, you turn them on, and she's not in them. Someone else.
Yeah, she's in them, but she's a ghost. I think you got that one right. I can't remember what. I'm pretty sure you got that one right. Yeah. Okay, number four. There is a Bollywood remake of the film called Hum Kaun Hai, but they changed the major plot point of the film. Can you tell me what the major plot point of the film they changed was in the Bollywood version?
So it actually was a Bollywood remake?
Yeah.
The major plot film... the major plot point they changed.
Yeah.
It was when Christopher Eccleston came back. He didn't come back for a shag. He came back for a lovely roast dinner.
Came back for a
bargee. The whole reveal of the of them being ghosts was a big song and dance number.
Yeah. Okay. So the thing that the major thing that changed in the film is that all of the characters were Indian. Okay. Number five.
Is that a plot point? Is that a plot point?
Feels pretty major. It's a major, you know, production
pretty
point.
Major, anyway. Yeah, you just wrote. That's a spanner that works there. Because you usually give me true or false. Now you're asking me to conjure answers myself. I'm not. I'm just not
trying to mix it up. Okay. Okay. Number five. To get the kids worked up, Alejandro would play scary music when they weren't expecting it.
I bet it was his music, wasn't it? I bet it was his music. He's really pushing the fact that he can score. He's just like, hey. Wouldn't this moment be even more scary? It does.
I think he was comparing it like by humming the tracks as he was, yeah. As he was doing the camera movements.
Nicole just shotgunning him. I can imagine that. That's true, yeah.
It's true, yeah. So I think you got them all right. Well, you know, you didn't quite get the Indian one.
Oh, I definitely got them all right, mate.
Okay, we need to grade the film. What are you thinking? What are you feeling?
It's all right, you know. I mean, it ain't amazing. It's always been a film that I've kind of always thought I didn't really like, and I guess this watching it again kind of confirmed that, but I definitely enjoyed certain parts of it. But I would probably go no higher than a C.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I wrote down a C, but I think I'm going to give it a C+. I think it's... I don't know what it is. I think it's a very, very, very well-made film. Very tight and tight. And
I look a tiger.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just like it's really well made. It's, you know, it's.
But does that kind of is that mean this? Sorry to interrupt. But no, does that mean it's kind of a bit devoid of soul?
It's a bit devoid of. I think like I think things could be too neat and too perfect. And
it feels ever so neat and ever.
Yeah,
perfect. It almost feels like like it's just been. There's probably loads left on the cutting room floor from this, and it's kind of just been really cut.
Yeah, but like I would say, so this film is a Spanish American co-production. This is like the highest grossing or the fourth highest grossing Spanish film ever made. And so I feel like giving it that PG vibe and it's like got like a family horror esque element to it and. It tells a very clean, neat story, and you know, delivers the punchline. It's like watching what's that comedian called? The one who does the looks a bit Asian but isn't Asian. You know who I mean? The English comedian. He's like a family entertainment sort of comedian.
Michael McIntyre.
Yeah, it's like watching him. Like it's all very polished and clean and good. And it's like good, but like I don't feel changed in any way.
It's like the most vanilla version of something.
Vanilla, yeah, plain, ready salted, like horror film.
Ready salted, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like it's enjoyable, but like you never really want to.
Never feels dangerous. Like you never feel there's no danger to it.
If you find yourself belly laughing at Michael McIntyre jokes, then obviously, yeah, you love ready salted.
And I feel like maybe after watching, Night of the Living Dead and. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, those films felt dangerous. And they were like told in like the 70s and this film was told like in the noughties and it just feels so plain. But it's good. But it's good. So I'm going to give it a C+.
Cool. That's fair, I think, Luke.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Okay. So next week we're going to be going a year later. I would say I don't think this film should be this high on this list. I don't think it quite lives up to the other films that we've seen so far. In terms of uniqueness, and
this film, as in the others,
yeah,
no,
the one coming up definitely deserves to be higher.
Definitely not.
Okay, yeah. So next week we're going to be talking about number 25 on the list, 28 Days Later, directed by Danny Boyle, starring Cillian Murphy in one of his first roles, I think.
Naomi Harris.
Who does she play?
She just plays another survivor in the film.
Black woman.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, yeah. okay, so yeah, this show is brought to you by Stoke Studio Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to www.hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovach Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. If you have any opinions on 28 Days Later, go over to facebook.com, search for Horror Hangout Board of Advisors and request to join the group, because, you know, we talk about it there. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. And thanks to my co-host Ben for being a real horror dude. Cheers, dude.
Thank you, Luke.
Right, I think that's it. I think we're done. We're pretty much bang on the hour. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.